Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello and welcome to Behind the Headlines. This is where we focus on some of the stories that have got you talking today. We're going to be hearing from a man who is believed to be the UK's longest serving victim of a miscarriage of justice. As he's told, he'll be released from jail. We're also trackside at Silverstone. And of course, we have a couple of exclusives for you. So if you're ready, we'll dive straight in. Before we do, I'll just introduce myself. My name's Louise Easton. I'm going to be your host on Tuesday, the 13th of May, 2025, as we go behind the headlines. First up, we're starting with this astonishing story of a man who has spent nearly 40 years behind bars for a crime he didn't commit. Peter Sullivan was convicted for a killing in 1968, which today has been quashed. Our special correspondent Georgie Podromou has been at the Court of Appeal and sent us this report.
Peter Sullivan sobbed, holding his head in his hands, his family crying out as this decision was made in court. He's now 68, but was 29 when the murder took place in what's now thought to be the longest miscarriage of justice involving a living prisoner in British legal history.
I am not angry. I am not bitter. I am simply anxious to return to my loved ones and family.
That's Peter's solicitor, Sarah Myatt, reading his words. His sister, Kim, also spoke outside of court.
We've got Peter back, and now we've got to try and build a life around him again. And it's such a shame that all this has had to happen in the first place.
Well, tomorrow, Peter Sullivan will experience his first full day of freedom after serving almost 40 years behind bars.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines. Now, before we get to our first exclusive, let's go trackside at Silverstone, where an important milestone has been reached. Today marks the moment the first ever championship race was held there. Let's cross now to Northamptonshire, where the history of motorsport is being celebrated.
I'm Callum McIntyre, and I'm at Silverstone as we mark this moment from 75 years ago.
Down goes the chequered flag for first man home, and it's Alfa Romeo's number two, Giuseppe Farina. Fagioli is second, Parnell third.
It's the very first Formula One race, which was held here in 1950 at exactly 3 p.m. And the new special exhibit celebrating the anniversary is now open at Silverstone Museum, showcasing some iconic F1 cars across the decades for the first time. Rob Jayner is head of learning and engagement and says it's about inspiring the next generation of F1 stars.
We do spend a lot of time on that kind of careers talk. So saying, okay, well, this might be one of Lewis Hamilton's wheels, but how's this made? What's the technology that's going in there?
Well, it's possible to get so close to these cars that I can even smell the remnants of fuel and rubber from when they raced all those years ago. And you can see more on our socials on X.
Experts are telling us lives will be saved if new tactics used by Kent Police to tackle knife crime are adopted across the country. Yesterday, we told you how the force has been offering vulnerable households rounded knives in exchange for sharp, pointed kitchen ones. Our reporter Josh Bailey spoke to Professor Leisha Nichols-Drew from De Montfort University about her research.
The pointed tip blades caused the greatest amount of damage to the clothing, as we would expect. The only knife that did not penetrate the garments at all in all of the experiments that we did was a round-ended knife. And that was the only one in all of our studies. That's a significant finding. For the first time, we could connect the fact that regardless of the length of the blade, it comes down to actually the shape of the tip and whether that implement will penetrate that fabric surface. Therefore, the likelihood of injury is severely reduced.
I was going to say, because if you're preventing injury, you're saving lives, aren't you? They're meant to go hand in hand, and that's so important.
They're there as a kitchen tool. They're there to help us prepare food. However, unfortunately, we know that in a situation such as an altercation, those knives, you know, they go from being a utility tool to a weapon in an instant, and that's what we're trying to prevent.
And you strongly believe that having a knife which has the end blunted out or rounded off would make home safer?
We will absolutely save lives. And if I can help one person stop them from being injured or having to go through the awful incidents that many of myself and my fellow experts have encountered through our careers, then that has totally to be worth it.
And you'll be able to hear more from Josh on this investigation through the week. Politicians in Scotland have been having their say on plans to introduce assisted dying for terminally ill adults. It's a similar bill to the one going through Westminster. Our Scotland political editor, Alan Smith, has been speaking with people on all sides of this debate.
Lib Dem MSP Liam MacArthur wants to give terminally ill Scots the option of getting medical help in ending their lives. His bill would apply to those over the age of 18 and would need two doctors to declare the patient was mentally fit to make the decision. But it's prompted a very emotional debate.
Live in poverty.
How many family members,
How many family members have you lost in the last five or six years?
This was the scene outside the Scottish Parliament as supporters and opponents of the bill clashed. I've been speaking to some of those who gathered, including Joanne Easton, who watched her dad die from cancer in 2021.
You can tell you've been through it or you've watched a loved one go through it. You just can't. You might have your beliefs. I guarantee you they'll change. And see when your loved one's screaming in pain and begging you for ways for them to help end their life, your opinions will change.
And that's been central to the arguments for this bill, the need to give people a choice over how they die and to ease the suffering. But there are fears vulnerable people could be pressured or coerced into ending their lives because they're seen as a burden.
It's really important when we think about legislation and policy that we're led by data and we're led by evidence in our decision making. We can't make policy on the basis of emotion or on the basis of what is ultimately anecdotal people's experiences about what they've had in their life or what they're worried about in their life.
That's disabled academic Dr. Miro Griffiths, who's a spokesperson for the Better Way campaign. He describes the proposals as dangerous and flawed. And these are the types of things MSPs will be weighing up as, for the third time in its history, Holyrood votes on assisted dying.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines. Still to come, we're talking Eurovision as the first semi-final gets underway. But now let's focus on our second exclusive. This one revolves around domestic abuse, specifically the use of Clare's Law. In West Yorkshire, people there are now being allowed to tell their family if they've used it following calls for change from charities and victim survivors. Our senior reporter Katie Lyons has more on this one.
Clare's Law allows people to find out through the police if their partner has an abusive past. But prior to now in West Yorkshire, they couldn't tell anyone that they'd received information.
I just felt like this isn't right. And so I went to West Yorkshire Police and said, is there any way that we can be met in the middle so that it is a fairer outcome for victim survivors so that they can get that support around ending a relationship and their safety planning?
Nicola Marlowe from the Leeds Domestic Violence Service called for the change, saying it was leaving victims feeling isolated.
To me, it's a no-brainer. You know, the victim survivors aren't sharing any information that's pertinent to the perpetrator, but what it does do is it allows them to get support from family and friends at a really difficult time in their life.
The change means people can now share they've received a disclosure but still can't say exactly what was on it. Emma used Clare's Law and agrees not being able to tell anyone was a scary experience.
There was a bit at the beginning where she was saying, you know, whatever we do disclose to you, you cannot share with anyone. So there was that as well, which was the only bit that was a little uncomfortable because it's quite scary being told if you tell anybody this, you yourself could get in trouble.
There are now calls for other police forces around the country to do the same.
It's the biggest week of the year for some music fans as Eurovision festivities get underway tonight. The first semi-final of the annual contest takes place in Basel in Switzerland. Our reporter Ellie Kumar's got all the details for this one.
Well, it feels like just yesterday when we were celebrating with Nemo and their winning song, The Code, in Malmö 2024. That win means Switzerland are taking on hosting duties this year, and tonight 15 hopefuls will be competing for a spot in Saturday's grand final. 10 will go through tonight and another 10 will go through from Thursday's second semi-final. Durham Uni student Charlie Curry's been a fan of the contest for a decade and says it's all to play for every country.
Staging is everything. We've seen songs that have been fan favourites which have then struggled to qualify or haven't qualified at all because the staging has been not impactful enough. But on the other hand, we've seen songs that no one ever considered could be front runners to win. win. And then they've gone on to get maybe top five, top three. It all comes down to how it transmits to the viewers on stage.
And there's still time for plenty more drama and big reveals, including whether or not pop icon Celine Dion, who won for Switzerland back in 1988, might perform at Saturday's final. The UK, as one of the so-called big five countries who help fund the running of the contest, are automatically through, so we will get to perform at the grand final.
And as Everton prepare to give Goodison Park a final send-off this weekend, we're taking a trip down memory lane. Our regional correspondent Victoria Glover's behind a new documentary featuring players, club staff and fans.
It's almost impossible to comprehend the history at Goodison Park. It's not just about football. It shaped the lives of fans dedicated to the Blues.
Oh, get in there! James McFadden!
You cannot buy atmosphere. You cannot buy what Goodison Park was like.
You could feel the intensity of the place, the passion. It's like a religion, football, up here.
I've been speaking to legends Peter Reid and Graham Stewart for a brand new audio documentary ahead of the gates closing for good on Goodison Park. Hear it in full on the news pages of our website now.
Well, for more on these stories, head to the news pages of our website or check out our social media channels. And be sure to come back again tomorrow when we'll continue to take you behind the headlines.